It was an unknown wilderness. It wasn't long before they went into the wide valleys of Kentucky through the Cumberland Gap.
Welcome to this edition of Old Kentucky Tales, the only podcast that solemnly swears that none of its participants have fought a duel with deadly weapons within this state or out of it. Still true to this day. Today's title is The Bride in the Attic, Frontier Wedding Antics. I am your host, Brent Taylor, Assistant Professor of History at West Kentucky Community and Technical College. And with me is the man who is just as totally awesome now as he was in the 80s. He is an Associate Professor of Communication at West Kentucky Community and Technical College, Jason Donner.
How you doing, Brent?
Doing great.
Man, I think we should do something with the 80s. I like that idea. Old Kentucky 80s.
Yeah, we could fire up the teleporter and get back there somehow. We might have to
think
about doing that.
Got
to
be some history back then.
No, not very much. But we'll find it. If it exists, we'll find it. In this episode of Old Kentucky Tales, we will look at earthquakes, past and present, in yesterday's news. And for our main event, we will examine the massive party that was the Kentucky Frontier Wedding. And along the way, don't forget to support the fake history sponsors who support Old Kentucky Tales. For yesterday's news, have you seen lately that the earthquake activity has ticked up around here?
Oh, what? You mean we're having more and more earthquakes?
They've made the news. They're really, really small, though.
Yeah, I've never really felt one. I think people have mentioned it.
Yeah.
Have you felt one before?
No, I have felt one before. It was a long time ago.
Okay.
But it kind of rattled the windows a little bit.
Yeah, I try not to think about it because we're right here on a bad one, aren't we?
We are on one of the very worst ones, and we completely forget about it.
I do.
Because we don't have them that often. But we've had them before.
You're
going to
jinx this thing, Brent.
It's like the free throws, right? Like I've mentioned it, and so now here comes the earthquake.
Yeah.
The big earthquake that we need to look at, though, is 1811 earthquake. And we've got a little story about that. It came out of the Missouri Territory over there.
Was it New Madrid, you mean? That?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So New Madrid Fault. This actually came out of Hickman Courier.
Okay.
So they're way over there. They pay attention to it a little bit. This story came out of Missouri, and the person told it as this. At first, the Mississippi seemed to recede from its banks, and waters gathering up like a mountain. They were on their way to New Orleans, these boats were, in which the poor sailors had to make their escape from them. It then rising 15 or 20 feet perpendicularly and expanding as it were at the same moment, the banks were overflowed with a retrograde current, rapid as a torrent. That does not sound fun, does it?
It must have been terrifying, too, when you have no warning in those days.
Right. Well, you wouldn't have a warning now either. I mean, earthquake just happens and boom,
well,
it's on top of you.
Right. No prediction, nothing.
Not for this. The boats, which before had been left on the sand, were now torn from their moorings and suddenly driven up a little creek, at the mouth of which they lay to the distance, in some instances, nearly a quarter of a mile. It's a really long way to throw a boat. The river falling immediately, as rapidly as it had risen, receded within its banks again with such violence that it took with it whole groves of young cottonwood trees. A great many fish were left on the banks, being unable to keep up pace with the water. The river was literally covered with the wrecks of boats. That's some scary stuff right there, Jason.
Yeah, I imagine that. Imagine just watching that happen. The water just rushes up. And then, like it says, it just comes right back down, just taking trees, leaving fish, everything.
Yeah, it's just a huge wave up, down, and then everything is completely destroyed in its wake.
Yeah.
The tales from some of the earthquakes like this were amazing. Things like the river running backwards.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. That was just in Kentucky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy to think about the river changing direction like that. But it's a lot of force, though.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it says later on that you would think that it was like a work of art. You wouldn't believe, unless you saw it happen, you wouldn't believe.
Oh, yeah.
That just naturally occurred, just snapping off those trees.
Yeah. Yeah. He's saying basically, unless you were there, you just really can't even picture it.
Mm-hmm.
That's how destructive it was. We've lived that, though, with things like the ice storm.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. It's kind of It's just an immense amount of power.
And that's exactly what they had there.
Right.
And now we've got to have some immense power going towards making some fake history dollars with a word from our first sponsor.
Whether quaffed from a vessel of tin, glass, or gold, there's nothing so good for the young or the old as Hires Root Beer. A delicious, health-giving, thirst-satisfying beverage. A temperance drink for temperance people. A 25-cent package makes 5 gallons. Sold and enjoyed everywhere.
5 gallons of root beer, Jason. How long is it going to take you to drink 5 gallons of root beer?
Like my whole life. It's not that great. 5 gallons? How often do you drink root beer? Maybe.
I have not had root beer in a very long time.
Uh-huh.
I do like it, but I just don't seem to prefer it over other flavors.
Not something you just think about.
No.
Let's go get root beer.
It's never directly on the grocery list.
It's kind of
bread, milk, root beer. I've never made a grocery list like that one.
When you're a kid, it's fun to drink because it's beer. It's root beer.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly what they're saying here.
Yeah, it's kind of
neat. This is a near beer.
Right.
Because if you're into temperance,
mm-hmm.
you're into getting rid of alcohol. So now you need to get into root beer.
Right. And it kind of feels like beer, I guess. It's the only drink out there that has beer in it, but it's not really beer, right?
Yeah, just feels like beer. I like how you put that. And now we are ready for the main event, which is the bride in the attic. What we're looking at here is something called Doddridge's Notes, and it is a really good early source for Kentucky history. He describes this wedding in here, and it's really neat to see some things have survived in wedding traditions,
right.
So they're super old. Some things have gotten whittled away, and we don't have those in the traditions anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see what he said about one of these frontier weddings. For a long time after the first settlement of this country, the inhabitants in general married young. There was no distinction of rank and very little of fortune. On these accounts, the first impression of love resulted in marriage, and a family establishment cost but a little labor and nothing else. In the first years of the settlement of this country, a wedding engaged the attention of a whole neighborhood, and the frolic was anticipated by old and young with eager expectation. This is not to be wondered at when it is told that a wedding was almost the only gathering which was not accompanied with the labor of reaping, log rolling, building a cabin, or planning some scout or campaign.
This is probably something everybody came out to see, right? You can't say neighborhood because everybody's spread out.
The whole community.
But it was a community event.
Of course it is.
And a party.
Of course it is.
Day long.
Small communities, everybody knows everybody. Mm-hmm. So basically the entire community's invited.
Right.
That's going to be the way to. And they worked all the time.
Yes.
Even their fun times were built around work. They made games out of work. And that's supposed to be your leisure time.
Yeah, we'll build a barn for fun.
Yeah, and it's a social event.
Yeah, social event, and they eat and talk, but also work.
Exactly. When they're mentioning log rolling, things like that, that's what they're talking about, social mm-hmm. events that are built around work. This is the one time that you truly have off, he says. And mm-hmm. that's really nice out there on the frontier. Even on the frontier, you have to have some leisure time. Let the reader imagine an assemblage of people without a store, tailor, or mounta maker, that's a dressmaker, within 100 miles. And an assemblage of horses without a blacksmith or saddler within an equal distance. The gentlemen dressed in shoe packs, moccasins, leather breeches, leggings, Lindsay hunting shirts, all homemade. The ladies dressed in Lindsay petticoats, Lindsay or linen bedgowns, coarse shoes, stockings, handkerchiefs, buckskin gloves, if any. If there were any buckles, rings, buttons, or ruffles, they were the relics of old times, family pieces from parents or grandparents. They make it all homemade.
Right, yeah. So this is probably the fanciest moment for them when they really come out looking their best.
Yeah, and it's probably not very good.
Well, in the style of the place and the day, right?
Yeah.
That frontier look.
Yeah.
Yeah, but even more than when they went to church.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Because it's a big event.
They're really dressed up.
And the thing
up.
That's crazy to me is, wow, you've got a belt buckle. That is so cool. I wish I had a belt buckle.
Yeah.
It's just something they can't get their hands
on.
Yeah,
yeah. It's metal. It's or jewelry, rings it talks about.
Yeah.
It's a real luxury. True.
So now it's time to go to the wedding because we've gotten all gussied up. The march in Doubtfile was often interrupted by the narrowness and obstructions of our horse paths, as they were called, for we had no roads. And these difficulties were often increased sometimes by the good and sometimes by the ill will of neighbors, by felling trees and tying grapevines across the way.
So they would actually kind of mess with them. They'd tease them.
And we do this still, right?
That's
true. People tie the cans onto the car,
right,
and put the little obscene messages on the window and whatever. I mean, that they're messing with these people just like we still do it today. So that's one thing that has survived. Let the reader imagine the scene which followed the discharge of several guns, the sudden spring of the horses, the shrieks of the girls, the chivalric bustle of their partners to save them from falling, because it's going to be another fun practical joke.
Right.
To shoot a gun.
Yeah.
Just and see watch how the whole wedding party just sort of fall apart.
Right. It's always fun to just scare people.
That's exactly what they're up to here. The ceremony of the marriage preceded the dinner, which was a substantial backwoods feast of beef, pork, fowls, sometimes venison and bear meat, roasted and boiled with plenty of potatoes, cabbage, and other vegetables. That sounds good, actually.
So the first thing they do is have the ceremony, and then the whole community, everybody's going to sit down to this huge meal.
The dinner is actually first here, it says. The dinner right after the marriage. That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
And big meal. It's going to be one of the best ones that you have. One thing, though, that shows you the poverty of this is if we continue here, it says that during the dinner, the greatest hilarity always prevailed, although the table might be a large slab of timber hewed out with a broad axe, supported by four sticks set in auger holes. And the furniture, some old pewter dishes and plates, the rest wooden bowls. A few pewter spoons, much battered about the edges, were to be seen at some tables. So we hardly have anything to even set the table.
Mm-hmm. And the rest were made of horns.
Oh, yeah. How gross would that be? You've got some soup here, a little cabbage on there or something.
Oh, no.
And you're
going
to lift that horn right up to your lips.
Right.
Yeah, that I would have a hard time eating with a horn.
Yeah.
No question about it. I think you're exactly right. After dinner, the dancing commenced and generally lasted till the next morning. The figures of the dances were 3 and 4 hand reels, square sets and jigs. So you've been to square dancing.
The square dancing.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
That's exactly what it is. The commencement was always a square four, which was followed by what was called jigging it off. That is, two of the four would single out for a jig, followed by the remaining couple. The jigs were...
Oh, so they take a moment to kind of show off a little bit, I guess. Is that what they're doing? They're partnering up. Everybody stops and kind of watches these two people dance.
Yeah, and it looks like it's really pre-planned ahead of time about how we dance and the dance moves and everything like that. Because just like square dancing, where we've seen that before. And this dance, though, just goes on and on and on once we get it started.
You mean continually? They don't stop.
It is a
they don't take
much,
a break.
Pretty much nonstop dance, according to this particular account here. And it says right here, the jigs were often accompanied with cutting out. When either of the parties became tired of the dance, their place was supplied by someone of the company without any interruption of the dance. In this way, a dance was often continued until the musician was heartily tired of his situation.
Okay, so that's so, true. They did. They just kept going, and then they'd... You get up, I'm going to sit down.
Yeah. And meanwhile, the poor fiddler's still up there sweating it out. Toward the latter part of the night, if any of the company, through weariness, attempted to conceal themselves for the purpose of sleeping, they were hunted up, paraded on the floor, and the fiddler ordered to play Hang On Till Tomorrow
Morning. Oh, there you go. Yeah. It's like you get back up here. We still do. It's the same kind of thought, though, where you want to get people who are just kind of sitting there, get them involved and...
Yeah, all
night
long.
Get up here and do
it
too. Let's see you do it too.
And don't try to sneak off for a nap,
right?
Because we're going to find you and put you out there.
Yeah.
About 9 or 10 o'clock, a deputation of the young ladies stole off the bride and put her to bed. In doing this, it frequently happened that they had to ascend a ladder instead of a pair of stairs, leading from the dining and ballroom to the loft, the floor of which was made of clapboards lying loose and without nails. So we've got a two-floor building here, but we don't have a staircase.
Right.
It's more like the little ladder that goes into the attic.
Yeah. So they're taking her up there. She's going to go to bed, or
Yeah.
She's waiting for the groom?
Yeah. All of the above.
They get all set up and get ready up there.
That's exactly what's happening.
Okay.
This ascent, one might think, would put the bride and her attendants to the blush. Be embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
But as the foot of the ladder was commonly behind the door, which was purposely opened for the occasion, and its rounds were at the inner end, were well hung with hunting shirts, petticoats, and other articles of clothing, the candles being on the opposite side of the house, the exit of the bride was noticed but by few. This done, a deputation of young men in like manner stole off the groom and placed him snugly by the side of his bride. This is a little bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to picture this. So everybody's still down there dancing.
Yeah, the party's happening, and we've taken the bride upstairs, and so now we're going to take the groom up there.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the party's still going on.
Right.
Yeah.
So they're up there together.
They're up there together.
Yeah.
And it's the wedding night. The dance still continued, and if seats happened to be scarce, which was often the case, every young man, when not engaged in the dance, was obliged to offer his lap as a seat for one of the girls. And the offer was sure to be accepted.
Now, this is the kind of thing I would get in trouble at the middle school dance. Girl sitting on your lap.
Oh, no.
No, no. That's not going to happen.
Right. But this is the frontier, and
yeah,
we don't have middle school yet. So
is here, it more innocent, yeah, maybe? Is it innocent thinking? Or maybe it was just innocently done?
You know,
you're not buying that.
I'm not 100% sure about that. We like to think of the frontier people as above the fray.
Right.
And all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Somehow
that that's
more
the
pious.
Case. No, yeah.
Not
and I
really,
think this
though.
Is a case where they let loose some.
Right.
I think that's a case where they let loose.
That's part of courting, too.
Right.
You have a kind of an excuse,
this
literally,
would be
to
a great
talk
excuse
to somebody, to
yeah,
get to know a girl. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're definitely on to what's happening here. Pretty late in the night, someone would remind the company that the new couple must stand in need of some refreshment. Black Betty, which was the name of the bottle, was called for and sent up the ladder. That's whiskey. But sometimes Black Betty did not go alone. I have many times seen as much bread, beef, pork, and cabbage sent along with her as would afford a good meal for half a dozen hungry men. This is the weird part.
Yeah.
The couple were compelled to eat and drink more or less whatever was offered them.
Oh, okay.
So that is, we just send up all this food and you're supposed to eat it.
Yeah. And have a drink.
And have a drink.
Right.
Exactly. In the course of the festivity, if any wanted to help himself to a dram, that's a drink of the whiskey, and the young couple to a toast, he would call out, "Where is Black Betty? I want to kiss her sweet lips." Black Betty was soon handed to him. Then holding her up in his right hand, he would say, "Health to the groom, and not forgetting myself, and here's to the bride, thumping luck, and big children."
Yeah, well, it was a toast.
Yeah.
It's essentially a toast, maybe something everybody kind of chanted out whenever they took a big drink.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And did you notice that we're sharing the whiskey bottle?
Yeah.
So I take a drink, make a toast. I'm going to hand it to you. You take a drink, make a toast.
You got to be really close to people to do that nowadays.
Yeah, I can't even imagine.
I'm going to need a glass separately. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Today, I don't think you can get away with just handing the bottle over to somebody and hoping for the best. The feasting and dancing often lasted for several days, at the end of which, several days, did you notice that?
Oh, yeah, okay. This couldn't have happened all the time. These people have things to do, though, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they have work to do.
Sure they do, but this is the break.
Yeah.
So we've stretched it out a few days. At the end of which, the whole company were so exhausted with loss of sleep that several days' rest were requisite to fit them to return to their ordinary labors.
Mm-hmm.
So you need a vacation from the vacation at that part.
Yeah, I guess this would be like a big event for them and just what's kind of an ordinary day after day. But a wedding, too, very important.
Of course, milestone.
Yeah, big milestone, beginning of a new life. Everybody there was probably of age that were married, and it was worth celebrating.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. And the whole community involved.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly right. But now we've got to pay a few more of these fake history bills. And that means that we've got to take another look at a second sponsor for this part of the program, which is the 64 Dodge, the dependables, success cars of 64, $2,264 not loaded, $2,674.80 loaded. And I don't know about you.
That thing is loaded, man. It's got a radio.
Yeah, that's totally loaded. Wheel covers.
Cover those wheels. Got white wall tires.
White wall tires. That's getting fancy back then.
Oh, boy.
Automatic transmission, and my personal favorite for the loaded model, the heater.
Oh, sure. I thought every car had a heater.
Not if it's not loaded.
The engine is generating heat. You know, it's not that big a deal to put a heater in there. Wow. Yeah.
So if you want the stripped down model,
yeah,
you better bring a cardigan.
It's going to move you around.
Indeed.
Yeah.
64 Dodge. Better go with the loaded version on that one. Jason, it's time for you to do your takeaway.
Hmm.
The biggest takeaway for today.
Okay, let me think. I think it's probably the wedding. You know, the idea that, and we do this in lots of different kinds of ways. Yeah, there are a lot of those similar things that are still going on or traditions that go on, but these moments. For people, especially in the frontier, it's not an easy life.
No.
And so they, when they find a moment to celebrate, to be together, to have a party, it's a big deal and it's important and they make a big deal out of it.
Yeah, they find that those little moments of joy.
Yeah.
Inside all the toil.
Right. And really like socializing.
Yeah. Oh, you know, that's huge. That's huge, socializing. You didn't get that chance. You were isolated.
Yeah. It's so isolated, like physically out on the farm. You didn't see people that much. So when you got a chance, it was way more important.
Very nice takeaway. We have now turned to the final page of this chapter, but never fear, more quirky old Kentucky tales are yet to be told. Special thanks to our sound engineer, Todd Birdsong, the Paducah School of Art and Design, and WKMS, and the rest is history.